Hi, I'm Arun Vanagopal, and you are listening to Midday. Many of us have felt on occasion that we've been spending way too much time in the subway. Apparently, this has not been true of my next guest, Philip Ashforth Coppola. For the last 40 years, he's haunted the MTA subway stations, sketching and documenting these extraordinary taken-for-granted spaces. He has researched the artisans, the craftsmen, and the architects responsible for the beauty that is there. His work is currently on view in the exhibition Silver Connections, which is at the Transit Museum's Grand Central Gallery until June 24th. His is the subject of a documentary made by Ezra Bookstein and Jeremy Workman, and his work has been edited by the filmmakers into a single volume published by Princeton Architectural Press. Both the book and the documentary are titled One Track Mind. Philip Ashford Coppola joins me here today, along with Ezra Bookstein and Jeremy Workman. Hi, guys.
Good afternoon.
Hey. Thanks for having us. Here.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining me. So, Philip, you did not grow up in New York, correct?
No, I'm from New Jersey.
Okay. Were you a train lover even as a kid?
Not really, no. This is something I sort of picked up midstream about 40 years ago.
Were you coming into the city as a young kid?
Not much, except for Thanksgiving Day Parade, Macy's, you know. That was about it. That was the PATH train, or Hudson Manhattan then.
So you weren't going into the subway system too much?
Not then, no.
Okay. Do you remember your first sort of like feelings of like appreciation for the aesthetics of the subway system?
I would say I got my first dose when I went to the Transit Museum in Brooklyn when I began this study in the first place. That was back in 78.
Okay. Now in the book, it says in the introduction to the book, in the early years, Coppola was often dismissed by subway historians as just another foamer, which is a new term to me.
Thanks. Thanks, guys.
It's not the nicest term.
Is this your first exposure to this term?
No, I've heard it before, but this is a new one.
They mean people who are obsessed with New York City subways and trains.
Foaming at the mouth.
Yes,
yeah,
unfortunately.
That's the idea.
So you're dismissed. Are you not considered a foamer yourself?
I never thought of myself as foaming.
He's more of a historian.
Yeah. So this is a whole cult, I guess, like of people who are obsessed or very into, very serious appreciators.
There's a serious subculture of rail fans mm-hmm. out there, but Phil sort of occupies a very unique space, which is he is much more interested in the subway decor mm-hmm. of, right. and the stations of New York City. Yeah. A lot of the rail fans are more interested in trains. Phil has devoted, you know, decades and decades to studying the decor in the historical New York City stations.
And do you have any formal training in terms of as an artist?
When I was a kid, I always liked to draw pictures and tell stories or write them down. And so it sort of like has followed me into this new venture.
And so tell me, why do you think drawing this is, I guess, why draw it versus, I guess, or write, have a book about this versus, say, a photo?
Well, I mean, I'll let Ezra jump in a second, but Phil wrote this incredible encyclopedia that includes all these details and facts and history of the New York City subway stations. But Ezra and I were really struck by the art in it. There's all these amazing hand-drawn drawings of all the decor, and one mm-hmm. person even described it to us as almost like an illuminated manuscript from the Middle Ages mm. where Phil not only does this incredible research, but he draws these meticulous details of the New York City stations. And that was sort of the basis of our book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Phil, you also were going to try to preserve, right? Preserve all the artwork.
The idea is to make a record of what we've got before more of it's lost.
And so when did you first realize that things were being lost?
In 78.
Okay, and that's when you started this project.
Right.
So 40 years later, are we losing a lot?
No, the MTA has done a wonderful turnaround, and they more or less either reconstruct what may have been damaged or deteriorated, or they add to it, and they keep the mosaics and just maybe change the white tiles.
So in turnaround, we're talking about there was initially an idea of like, we don't need all this old stuff.
Yes.
And then how did this turnaround happen?
Len Ingalls was a new person at the MTA about in the mid late 70s, and he had the change of mind and a change of philosophy to impart to the people he worked with, And he's, I think I, that's what I was told. He was one of the people to sort of change the course.
And I think a lot of the listeners know, I mean, the New York City stations, they're infused with all this sort of historical art. You know, this, what we're talking about are the, is the artwork and the details from the Contract 1 and Contract 2 mm-hmm. stations. So this is 1904,
right.
You know, these right. are over 100 years old, and they're still amongst us as, you know, for commuters who take the subway today. And it's all those mosaics and faience and the detail in the station and on the walls that people don't really notice. And you know, Ezra and I were really struck by not only Phil and his massive project, but just this idea that there was this sort of artistry and amazingness right in the middle of the stations that a lot of people hadn't even seen. And that's what mm-hmm. really struck us.
Yeah, it was designed from the ground up to be a golden age, gilded mm-hmm. age mm-hmm. kind of,
you know, great civic project.
Yeah, and to bring
promote the
them,
greatness of New York.
Bring the masses underground and make mm-hmm, them feel comfortable mm-hmm. in this new technology of the subway.
We're talking about the beauty of New York City subway stations with Philip Ashworth Coppola and Ezra Bookstein and Jeremy Workman. So in 1900 and 1904, when these stations were being built, was there a very much, was this about civic pride, or was it really about, you had certain people like John Jacob Astor and all, I guess, celebrating these very wealthy men? What was really informing the aesthetics of these stations?
It was the mayor himself and his committee.
And who was the mayor?
McClellan.
Okay.
Well, he was the mayor in 1904. I think Van Wyck was the, was in 1900. And then Seth Lowe, then McClellan. Anyway, that was the idea was the city beautiful, and the idea was to promote the greatness of New York City as a rival to the European cities of their of, you know, with all their history and greatness of centuries past.
And so, was this a moment when New York City was really kind of coming into its own as an international city,
yes.
a city of great power?
I would say so, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it was the 1890s, it was the 1900s, mm-hmm. it was mm-hmm. that, mm-hmm. you know, that gilded age where everything was so sort of, you know, there was incredible design and, you know, events and things for the city. And it, there was this incredible, what's now the City Beautiful movement that mm-hmm. happened at that time, right at the same time when the New York City subway was going up.
Yeah, it's when they were building the public library, the post office, Penn Station, all these beautiful old buildings. And so Hines and Lafarge, the architects behind all this new work for the subway, wanted to really take that and go further. Yeah.
Right, they were commissioned to continue the City Beautiful underground.
Yeah.
You mentioned the Astor, you know, and it's interesting because that plays such a sort of prominent part in a lot of people's understanding of this, you know, decor of the New York City subway station. For example, the Astor station.
Yeah, why is there a beaver there?
Yeah, there's a beaver faience, right.
And everyone knows the beaver.
Okay, and
I
love this word faience. For the first time in this book, and I was like, I'm gonna mispronounce it. So thankfully, you've told me how to pronounce it.
I only learned it from Phil.
It's
himself.
Not fiance.
No, no, not quite.
It's what like is faience?
Faience is, I'm gonna get this wrong. It's like the baked mold, baked clay that the
same as terracotta, but it goes through an extra process to make it more durable. It's like designed like to really be good to withstand like exterior work on buildings.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So like on the 6th station at Astor Place, there's beaver faience. So
right.
Everybody's,
and this is where the beaver's actually like digging into a tree, right, with its mouth?
That's the idea. Gnawing.
Yeah.
It's gnawing on a tree.
And it's to symbolize Astor's original fortune, which mm-hmm. he made in beaver pelts.
Not about his voracious wealth.
Kind of is.
It
that's
is.
Sort
because
of, they dovetail. Yes.
Oh, yeah?
I would say so, yes.
Okay, so
he
it's
made
a little
his
punny,
first
huh?
fortune in beaver pelts and then mm-hmm. came to buy up most of New York.
Uh-huh.
And yep. this was his homage.
The landlord. Of New York.
So it was an homage. So was he funding this particular station's
no,
decor?
No, he had passed away before this time.
He'd been dead 100 years, maybe.
But in, okay,
not that much.
Okay, that's right. I don't know my Robert Barons too well. But basically, what some of these places, these stations were paid for, or at least the decor was paid for by the institutions. Like City College paid for their there sign it, right?
That was special. That was an extra special, yes. They had a petition to have their name put on the walls.
And that took like, what, 15 or 20 years?
20 years about
right,
that.
Right. There's a funny story with that, too, that, you know, Columbia University has some incredible mosaics and decor in their station on 116th Street, which you get on, you know, from the one train. And it's the beautiful, you know, Columbia alma mater sign, you mm-hmm. know, and it's really beautiful. There's little monograms. You could see it. You could see mm-hmm. many of them today on the one station. And from the research that Phil did and then Ezra and I picked up, City College, which is at 137,
right.
They felt, you know, they had a little bit of kind of a rivalry with Columbia and felt like they were getting the short end of the stick. So they wanted also to have really lush design in their station. So they basically essentially self-funded to put those designs up at their station.
Mm-hmm. So are any favorites you guys have? What is your, do you have, is it hard for you to name your favorite, like picking favorite baby in terms of a favorite station and decor?
It's pretty easy. I mean, the most elaborate, gorgeous station is the Borough Hall Station in Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It opened in 1908.
Okay.
It was part of the second contract.
And why do you think that stood out or stands out for you?
Well, golly, the amount of mosaic design and the festoons and flowers and the monogram, the BH monogram and the wreath, the victory wreath. I mean, the whole thing is like enormously imposing.
Again, this is something where most New Yorkers, you know, Borough Hall probably gets thousands and thousands of commuters going through it a day, and yet probably so few of them are aware that there's these incredible mosaics and artwork on the walls. And it's really incredible when you go down there and just take a minute and look at it. And that was really something that struck Ezra and I when we were working with Phil.
Oh, and there's some really playful ones. I don't know how old it is, but the one in the Fashion District where you have all the ones with different hats at different levels and that kind of thing. Does this ring
it's
a bell?
Really a new installation. It's about 23rd, 28th Street, I think.
Maybe
on,
so.
On we don't IRT. Mess with the new stuff. Well, we only like the historical stuff. You know,
new is anything over after 1908.
If it's over, if it's less than 100 years old, we're not interested.
After my birth, I would say that's all new stuff. 1948.
Well, one of my favorites is the Fulton Street Steamboat.
Downtown Manhattan.
Yeah, I had no idea what that was about. Hadn't really paid any attention to it until I met Phil and got involved in this project. But Fulton, apparently he created a steamboat.
Apparently.
Built a steamboat, and everyone said it'll never work. Mm-hmm. It, there's no way it can be as fast as a ship with sails. Mm-hmm. And he proved them all wrong.
Sure did. And so what does it look like in that station?
There's these like faience sort of plaques of beautiful the ship, you know, the Fulton ship that's right up there. And how many are up in that station?
Only four that I've been able to see.
All right. So there's four now that are there. And maybe of the original, there could have been a couple dozen.
So how long, Philip, are you spending in a given station? I guess it depends on the station. But how much time does it take to document this by
hand? Depends how complex it is. I may be there for a couple of hours.
Okay.
I mean, I'm walking back and forth the platform, counting pillars and measuring the length and looking at the walls and trying to take down the decor.
You're doing every pillar if every pillar is different.
No.
But Ezra and I have been with Phil and watched him count tiles and count mosaics. Yeah. So you're approaching it, you know, very almost forensically, you know, with each station.
And there's what? How many? Like 600 stations? How? Whatever.
Oh, 470, about that much.
And how many?
But Phil has only done
110.
Right,
a mere 110 stations.
In 40
Come
years.
On.
That's bad.
So he goes into the station. He does, you know, he reviews them. He does all the research of them. He charts the layout. He goes with just his pad. Which we, you know, document also in the book, his notepad. And then he goes home and, you know, like a great draftsman, he has a ruler and a pen, and then he redraws all of these mosaics.
And when I think about all the artwork and the hand, like the manual work that went into these artisans were doing in 1900, 1904, 1908, I imagine even though labor costs were a lot lower then, this was probably pretty expensive to invest that much love and attention into one station, right?
I think Belmont spent like $50,000 on it.
Belmont spent $50,000
Aldous Belmont. He was the financier for the contract 1 and 2, the first earlier subway station to the line. It was his private railroad.
And Hines and Lafarge were spending too much money early on, and he had to come in and say, "Oh, enough fans. Let's go
more mosaics. Can you really get enough fans?
More mosaics," he said.
Yeah, so it's funny because as you trace through the tracks, you actually see where the stations change and they become much more sort of processed and not, they don't have the hand of the artist as much. And we track it quite a bit in our book where you actually see the changeover and it becomes a lot more uniform in the upper stations.
I've been speaking to Ezra Bookstein, Jeremy Workman, and Philip Ashforth Coppola about Mr. Coppola's book and the exhibition, Silver Connections. That exhibition is on at the Transit Museum's Grand Central Gallery until June 24th. It's a beautiful book. Thank you.
Yeah, the book is One Track Mind, which is what Ezra and I sort of took Phil's artwork.
The book is One Track Mind. The exhibition is Silver Connections. Apologies for that. And the documentary is also called One Track Mind. Gentlemen, thank you all for joining me today.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.